Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from People Mover. Help update the public transit service plan. Visit transitonthemove.com to take the latest public survey by April 26th.
Having more shipbuilding assets in our state builds on more Coast Guard assets, and then it's going to increase more shipbuilding.
Senator Dan Sullivan highlights icebreaker vessels being built for Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 17th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a musher discovers 25 dead sled dogs at a Matsu kennel.
When he got there, there were no tracks in or out of the snow through the area. There were not any signs that the property was occupied or being used.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly. The U.S. Coast Guard announced yesterday that the first of its two new medium-weight icebreakers will be homeported in Alaska. A Finnish firm is under contract to build up to four of the ships, called Arctic Security Cutters, and the first is projected to arrive in 2028. Senator Dan Sullivan celebrated the homeporting announcement with a cabinet secretary who oversees the Coast Guard, Mark Wayne Mullen. In a video posted on social media, they credited each other. Mullen said he'd never seen Sullivan so excited.
You're like a kid in a candy store.
I am a kid in a candy store. It's great for Alaska. It's great for America. And it took my good friend Mark Wayne Mullen, the new Secretary of Homeland Security, to actually say, we're doing it.
The Coast Guard hasn't decided yet where in Alaska the two icebreakers will be assigned or if they will be kept at the same port. But the announcement adds a feather to Sullivan's cap as he runs for a third term, especially because billions of dollars of icebreaker funding was in last year's budget reconciliation bill, and Sullivan strives to portray the contentious legislation as hugely beneficial to Alaska. Sullivan says having another Coast Guard vessel homeported in Alaska will create economic momentum as the ships undergo maintenance.
Having more shipbuilding assets in our state builds on more Coast Guard assets, and then it's going to increase more shipbuilding capacity and the jobs in this sector of our economy.
Last year, the Coast Guard christened the Storis, an icebreaker that was converted from an oil field services ship. The Coast Guard announced its home port will be Juneau once facilities for it are completed. That's projected to be in 2029. Congress has also appropriated billions of dollars to build a fleet of heavy icebreakers called Polar Security Cutters. Normally, Alaska has three people at the U.S. Capitol arguing for federal land and natural resources policies that boost the state's economy. This week, 150 Alaskans fanned out across the Capitol to make the case for their industries, ranging from drilling and mining to tourism and fishing. Alaska State Chamber President Katie Capozzi is an organizer of the lobbying mission dubbed Alaskans on the Hill. She says the goal is to reach out to lawmakers representing other states.
So we heard from our senators, Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan, a couple years ago, that they needed our help, that they needed the real-life stories of Alaskans, that they can't do it all by themselves.
Industry priorities vary and sometimes conflict. Capozzi says the single issue almost all agree on is the need to speed up federal permitting.
We have a real opportunity because I think for the first time ever, a lot of renewable folks and oil and gas folks are working together to say we need this for all of our industries. So it's a kind of a unique moment in time.
The U.S. House has passed permitting reform bills, but it's not clear they can pass the Senate. Opponents are leery of shortcuts on environmental protection. Senator Lisa Murkowski told the Alaska Advocates not to forget that their industries need a strong workforce, too. She says that takes housing, good schools, and affordable health care for families. This was the third year for Alaskans on the Hill, and organizers expect to be back next year, too. Local mushers and other Matsu Borough community members are angry and frustrated after 25 dead sled dogs were discovered at a rented kennel property north of Willow. Local mushers say they had called animal control authorities for months with concerns about how or if the dogs were being cared for at the property near Caswell Lake. Then on Tuesday, a local musher visited the property and found the dead dogs. Anchorage Daily News reporter Zachariah Hughes covered the story and joins us now. Zach, how were you first alerted to this story?
I was first contacted earlier this week by a musher in the area who was familiar with the whole case, had called animal control about it, and actually had been on a FaceTime call with the musher who discovered the dogs at the Caswell property and recorded it. And she got in touch with me. This was Alyssa Boozer, a name that's familiar to basically anyone who knows anything about mushing, because she is the partner of Martin Boozer's son, Roan Boozer, who ran this year's Iditarod. So she got in touch with me and followed up with some of the materials that are cited in the reporting. And that's how it got on my radar. I will say, though, by Thursday morning of this week, this was all over Facebook. We were getting news tips to ADN's tip line about it. And so it was definitely something that people were hearing about, beginning to share information about, and was out there.
Mike Dolinar is the musher who went to the property. Tell us what he reported he found on Tuesday.
I mean, not just reported, he recorded finding a lot of dead dogs. And the video is so upsetting to anybody that cares about animals, knows anything about animals, knows anything about mushing, and has been in a dog lot, because it's a kind of grim tour. He and other people had heard that most of the dogs that they'd been calling about, reporting, knew to be at the property, had been adopted out. He went to go see if that was true and had heard maybe there was one dog there. And when he got there, there were no tracks in or out of the snow through the area. There were not any signs that the property was occupied or being used, and it was quiet. And he walked around and he found a lot of dogs in their boxes and on their property, and they were not alive. He went to the window of the house. There was another animal that he could see that was dead inside. And so it was gnarly. And he promptly, there was one sled dog that was alive, and he very quickly got it into his truck and took it to a local veterinary center. The animal was attended to. He said he has a background in veterinary care, obviously very familiar with sled dog health and physiology, and he said he'd never seen a dog that skinny and guessed that it had been at least 2 weeks since it had eaten. So one dog was recovered. The others, he believes, starved to death.
Just horrific. What's known about what happened to the people who were renting the property and appear to have abandoned the dogs?
Not a ton is known about them. I mean, I can say from reporting out, their names are out there. We did not use their names in this newspaper story because it was a little bit tricky to establish that these were their dogs, and we don't like to report anything that we can't be absolutely sure of. This was a rental property. The owner, as I understand it, was definitely not the one who was in charge of these animals, and charges have not been filed. So the mushing community does believe they know who these people are. They've not been in Alaska for that long, just a couple of years, and kept a kennel. We're not known to go out and do a whole lot of mushing. The couple had was a man and a woman. They had worked for some mushers in the area in different capacities, everything from babysitting to kind of dog handling and helping with dog chores. And what a lot of people have told me, what multiple people have told me, was that this couple split up. The man left the state. The woman was left in charge of the dogs. And that's when concerns started to get raised this last January that they were not being taken care of. And so these were people that were known within the mushing community. I would not say they were, hardcore, dedicated, established mushers. But, Willow, Talkeetna, Caswell, I mean, these areas are not, people know each other.
What have borough leaders said about this failure to protect these dogs?
Not much that I've seen, but again, this is still working its way through. A spokesman for the borough on Thursday didn't have a lot to offer, said that they were really kind of getting up to speed on what had happened. And on Thursday, the borough put out a statement about all that happened, also announcing that they were going to conduct two investigations into this. One would be internal. Another would be through a third party to look at what happened and kind of begin building, I would suspect, some accountability about what took place.
Thank you for helping us understand this really sad, tragic story, Zach.
Thanks for having me.
That was Zachariah Hughes, a reporter with the Anchorage Daily News. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a historic Chilkat robe makes its way back to Southeast.
We're excited about the opportunity to display it and have it back and be stewards of it and take care of it.
That's ahead. Stay with us. Alaska State Troopers, Anchorage Police, the FBI, and several other agencies work together to crack down on sex trafficking operations at illicit massage parlors in Anchorage and the Mat-Su. They disclosed the results of their year-long undercover investigation at a joint news conference yesterday. Alaska State Trooper Colonel Maurice Hughes says the probe led to 7 arrests and identified 11 vulnerable adults who had been exploited.
Individuals believed to be victims were contacted by investigators, offered advocacy, support, and also connected with resources and support organizations. These individuals were not the focus of the investigation. They were the reason for the investigation.
Hughes says the victims were from out of state or from foreign countries. None were from Alaska. Anchorage Police Chief Sean Case says investigations of this type are very complicated and take time because the victims were fearful of law enforcement.
To trust law enforcement in a situation that they traditionally don't trust law enforcement, it takes a special kind of cop to investigate these crimes. A cop that's really focused on the victims, focus on establishing those relationships, those dialogue, to get the victims where they're at a point where they can further the investigation.
Case says the investigation is far from over. He says his department plans to ask the Anchorage Assembly to pass a measure that will expedite trafficking investigations. The Anchorage School District announced today that it will lay off 56 teachers. That's about 2% of the nearly 3,000 teachers employed by the district. Superintendent Jarrett Bryant says the lack of state and local funding makes the cuts necessary.
Today is an incredibly difficult day for the Anchorage School District community, one of the more difficult we've faced in many years.
A one-time tax levy meant to fund teacher positions at the district recently failed by an extremely slim margin. Bryant says if it had passed, the district would have been able to hold on to some of the teachers losing their jobs. Bryant says the students will see larger class sizes in all grade levels and high school students will likely have fewer electives. Bryant says in past years, ASD was able to rehire teachers after an increase in state education funding. He says it's too early to know whether a boost in state funds would make rehires possible this year. He says he hopes the district can regain the community's support.
Is this where we want to be? Absolutely not. We need to earn more trust from the community so that we can have successful ballot propositions in the future.
The district is eliminating roughly 500 positions in total this year through teacher layoffs, attrition, and by cutting support staff. The district will face another large budget deficit next year. Like the rest of the country, Alaskans have been paying a lot more for gas in recent weeks due to ongoing conflict in the Middle East. Economists say it's not an area where people tend to have a lot of wiggle room in their budgets. You still have to get to work, after all. And that's the sentiment Alaska Public Media's Ava White heard when she talked to Alaskans at the pump last week.
Bryant Fiorenzi is fueling up a dark gray 2010 Mercury Mariner on a recent Sunday in Fairbanks.
And it's really good on gas compared to most cars, but that doesn't really help much when the gas is $4.50 a gallon. I can't remember a time in my driving life where I was paying $4.50 a gallon.
Fiorenzi commutes half an hour to work each day and has been carpooling with his girlfriend to save money. Gasoline prices have soared nationwide since the United States and Israel went to war with Iran in late February. The average price of a gallon in the state costs about a dollar more today than it did a year ago, according to AAA, averaging more than $4.60 per gallon. And Alaska is about 50 cents more expensive than the national average. It's an increase Kelly Johnson has noticed, pumping gas at the Fred Meyer in South Anchorage. She fills up here because she gets fuel points for each dollar she spends. She's buying $10 worth at a time to get by until payday, which buys her just over 2 gallons of gas.
So that $10 right there is getting my husband to work. I wish I could go like 50, 60 bucks a week, but it's barely lasting. It's going super fast.
Johnson says the higher prices are forcing her to reallocate money from other parts of her budget, like groceries.
I'm dipping into my savings just to get back and forth.
Johnson isn't expecting gas to become cheaper anytime soon. The price volatility also creates uncertainty in some rural Alaska villages, where gasoline is barged in, locking in fuel prices until the next shipment arrives. It's not yet clear how the ongoing war with Iran will affect those prices. Kevin Berry chairs the Department of Economics at the University of Alaska Anchorage. When gas prices rise, he says consumers don't typically change their buying habits in the short term, but that might change if prices stay high.
People have to go to work. They have to be able to get to the grocery store. They have a lot of trips that they're not elective. In the long run, that person who's drawing from their grocery budget may start like figuring out how to take the bus different places, or they might start carpooling or doing other things to reduce the amount of gasoline that they purchase.
Rising gas prices are regressive and disproportionately affect low-income households. A top federal official said in April that the Fed might have to cut its key interest rate if higher gas prices cause the economy to slow. Barry says households feel the squeeze of high gas prices differently, especially in a place like Anchorage.
We've got commuters from the Valley who are driving an hour every day both ways. They're definitely going to feel it more.
Barry got a new vehicle last spring and says if he knew gas would be pushing $5 a gallon, he would have opted for an electric vehicle. And that's a switch some Americans are making amid the high gas prices. As soon as Anchorage's spring breakup dries out, Barry plans to swap his truck with his bike, which will add at least half an hour to his transit time.
The one upside is this happening right before summer means that maybe more people are able to do that. I am going to do my best to not drive to work again. And it's $100 a tank of gas. So I'd rather not pay for that just to go to my job.
A poll from Reuters in March found many Americans had taken a financial hit due to rising gasoline prices. Fiorenzi, with the Mercury Mariner and Fairbanks, says rising costs across the board have left him with a gloomy economic outlook in general.
I just think it's going to be really hard for this up-and-coming generation, the one that wants to, like, move out, get out of their parents' houses, stuff like that, because these prices are killer.
It'll likely be a while until Alaskans see gas dip back below $4 a gallon. President Donald Trump said earlier this month that the price of oil and gas could remain high through the November midterms. With help from Shelby Herbert and Fairbanks and a full gas tank that cost me about $100, I'm Ava White in Anchorage.
Two soldiers stationed at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson were injured by a bear during a training exercise Thursday on base, officials say. In a statement, Leslie Chatterton with the 673rd Air Base Wing said the two soldiers were injured during a land navigation training event at the base. A task force from the base responded and provided medical care. Reached by phone, a spokeswoman with the 673rd declined to comment further on the incident, including the status of the soldiers and where the attack took place. Citing an official with the U.S. Army 11th Airborne Division, the Anchorage Daily News reports the incident happened at the base's Arctic Valley training area. Both soldiers used bear spray during the encounter. Officials say they were working with J-Bear staff and local wildlife officials to investigate the incident. A new company says it's planning to build a luxury resort and event center in the hills of Fairbanks on land with ties to the gold mining history. But as KUAC's Patrick Gilchrist reports, while those ideas have been percolating, so has nearby skepticism.
When cabinet maker Keenan McCurgan first opened the website for North Star Grand Lodge, he thought it looked, in a word,
dishonest.
McCurgan owns property close to the lodge's planned location in the Esther Dome area, home to mining claims, residences, and popular trails. Here's a bit more on his first impression.
It felt like something like that somebody outside of Fairbanks that didn't know anything about this town might fall for.
The website features vivid images of attractive cabins, a modern hotel, and a glowing arena among picturesque backdrops. They purportedly communicate the vision of Daniel Keck and his colleagues at DXDT, a startup incorporated in Delaware last year.
This is the prototype.
On a day in early April, Keck sits behind a small desk in an office and lab space on the 187-acre property on the west side of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Visuals of cabins, similar to those on the website, are printed in color and stacked on the desk. And yeah, Keck said later in an interview, artificial intelligence created the concept images.
I'm not necessarily interested in hiring people that can create renderings when there's this remarkable tool out there that does remarkable things.
He founded McKenzie Keck, a construction management firm incorporated in New Jersey in 1992 that's helped build upscale retail stores. Now the executive director at DXDT, Keck says he wants the for-profit 340-unit luxury resort and the nonprofit 3,600-seat event center to improve the quality of life for locals and contribute to solving problems like out-migration.
I hope it brings commerce. I hope it puts the community in a situation where everybody can win. And if you can get luxury heads and luxury beds, everybody else will follow.
Keck is inspired by developments in Scandinavian countries and guesses costs for making his ideas reality will total $400 million. But the magnitude of the project would be new.
I am not aware of any projects of that size in the Fairbanks area.
Kim McGinnis is an assistant professor of business administration at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She's working to foster and teach local investors, but says that's not the only way to create benefits.
I can't speak to the particulars of this one, but outside money can play a role in helping support economic development.
But
there's a lot of T's to cross and I's to dot.
That includes juggling the interests of investors and dealing with Interior Alaska's short construction season. There are other hurdles, like sourcing water, and several residents KUAC spoke with were concerned about increased traffic on the narrow roads. To McKergan, the critic from earlier, the whole idea seems harebrained. But if it does get built, then sure, he says, maybe he could one day build cabinets for North Star Grand Lodge.
If they commission local workers to do a lot of the things, yeah, there'll be a short-term boon for the economy.
He says he could be all for the idea, but that's only if the company holds itself accountable, follows through on commitments, and takes care of the community. In Fairbanks, I'm Patrick Gilchrist.
Two Chilkat robes, one very old, one not yet on the loom, will soon belong to a Lincat clan as they work to rebuild their clan house in Sitka. KTOO's Yvonne Crumrie has more.
In the last year, California sculptor Bruce Beasley started to think about how he can repatriate his collection of indigenous art to the people who made it.
I'm going to be 87 in a month, and I was afraid that if I didn't get this done myself, that when my family took over the house, they would just give it to the local museum. And I didn't think that was the best thing to do.
Nick Klein is a partner at Alaska Premier Auctions and Appraisals. Beasley first reached out to him about a narwhal tusk in his possession. But as Klein describes it, their conversations turned to other items he owned.
And it really got the gears turning in my head is, what else might Bruce have in his collection? So we started poking and prodding a little bit. And a week or two later, he sent over a picture of this gorgeous robe.
The robe is dated to the 1890s. Beasley got it in 1967 when he traded one of his sculptures for it. It's been in his home since. He told Klein he wanted to donate the robe, and Klein thought of Kiksati clan member Jarek Hope Lang, who's been working to rebuild his clan house.
I think that would be a perfect fit on account of his clan is somebody who's actually going to use the robe in ceremonies and see it brought back to life for the people as opposed to having it go and wither in a collection that may or may not ever be seen again.
Hope Lang has been fundraising to rebuild the Point House Clan House in Sitka. He says the robe's design, a diving whale, is common and not associated with specific clans. In Kiksati possession, the robe will be danced and brought up for ceremonies, he says.
Things were created for purpose. And what this does is it places purpose right in the purpose it was designed for and used for. So we're excited about the opportunity to display it and have it back and be stewards of it and take care of it.
And this robe's return to Southeast Alaska coincides with the creation of another robe. The book Anushi Tlingit Anika, Russians in Tlingit America, outlines a significant period in Kiksati history. On its cover is an illustration of a robe that doesn't exist. The weaver who designed the robe for the cover is Clarissa Rizal, who died in 2016. Hope Lang has been working with that weaver's daughter, Kadusne Ursula Hudson, to bring it to life.
We need the past and we need the present. How do you merge those two together? And there are questions that we're going to find in community and we're going to continue to create.
He envisions the two robes, old and new, standing together in Kiksati ceremonies. Hudson is the weaver on this project. She says robes are more than just material objects.
We know that these belongings are our relatives,
They're our ancestors.
While the process of bringing the diving whale robe back to Southeast Alaska is repatriation, the practice of creating new robes is rematriation, she says.
Rematriation is the return of ways of being and not just the return of belongings. And it's the return of ways of relating to one another and with the land and with each other, with other clans, with other nations, and with ourselves. And so it goes beyond just getting our material culture back. And yeah, both are absolutely necessary.
In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery.
The diving whale robe arrived in Sitka earlier this week and will be brought out and danced at the Pink Martini Point House fundraiser in Sitka and Juneau this week. And Hope Lang wants to bring it to Celebration in June as well. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Rhonda McBride, Wesley Early, Hannah Floor, and Ava White in Anchorage, Patrick Gilchrist in Fairbanks, and Yvonne Crumery in Juneau. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us, news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Kirsten Dobroth and Annie Feit produced tonight's show. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.